are listening to Preconceived, where we examine the preconceptions that shape how we view the world and the paradigms by which we live our lives.
Hey everybody, I'm Zale Mednick, and welcome to another episode of Preconceived. Some societal customs are so ingrained in us that we rarely take a step back to question or even just reflect on them. The act of tipping is something that has become so expected in the service industry that although the act is technically voluntary, electing not to tip someone is considered very taboo and essentially sends a message of dissatisfaction regarding the service. So how did tipping come to be such an entrenched custom in the service industry? And does tipping lead to more profitability for restaurateurs? How do both customers and servers feel about tipping? Is this a practice that should continue, or is it a tradition that society should reconsider? I'm delighted to be joined by William Michael Lynn today. Mike is a nationally recognized expert on tipping who has written over 70 research publications on this topic. His work on tipping has been covered by the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, the International Herald Tribune, The Economist, and Forbes, as well as by ABC's 2020, BET's Nightly News, and NPR. A former bartender, busboy, and waiter, Mike received his PhD in social psychology from The Ohio State University in 1987 and has taught in the marketing department of business and hospitality schools since 1988. He is currently the Burton M. Sack Professor in Food and Beverage Management at the Cornell University's School of Hotel Administration. Mike, thanks so much for joining me.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
It's interesting that at one point you were a server, you were a busboy, a bartender, because that gives you a really different perspective in addition to all the studies you've done and research you've done into this topic.
And that's part of why I started studying it in the first place, is that I had this background. I noticed that other servers were making more money than me, and I always wondered why. And so when I became a grad student in social psychology, I decided, among other things, to look into it.
Has your research into all of this, have you found out an answer as to why they might have been making more money than you during your serving days?
Yeah, basically, I'm too introverted. I was very task-focused. I delivered timely service, you know, but I didn't establish rapport with my customers. And tipping is more about social connection than it is about service.
For the food industry in particular, many people, when they're tipping, they say, well, why am I tipping? Like, even if you did provide phenomenal service and you did develop this connection with me on some level, isn't that kind of your job? Isn't that embedded in the prices that I'm paying for you to deliver this service? How did it arise that the food industry in particular has become so tip-oriented as opposed to these other service sectors?
It's an interesting question, and I have some things that I can tell you about it, but let me start by saying I'm not a historian. But what I was going to say is there is an anthropologist named George Foster who specialized in envy, our tendency to be upset when other people are doing better than us. And when you envy someone, you will retaliate, or often retaliate against them. And he developed this theory that tipping evolved in eating and drinking places as a way to forestall the envy of the service worker. After all, when I'm in a restaurant or a bar as a customer, I'm enjoying myself, eating, drinking, usually with friends or family, and the worker that's serving me is working, doing a job that they may not necessarily want to be doing that particular moment. I'm in a better position hedonically than the service worker, and it would be natural for that service worker to envy me and to resent my superior position. According to Foster, tipping evolved as a way for me to give them money to say, hey, don't envy me. Here's money. Go have a drink on me later. And some of the evidence he used to support that theory is that the word for tipping in many countries, like France, it's pourboire, it's money for drink. In Asian countries, it was tea money. So one answer to your question is tipping evolved in the food and beverage industry to a greater extent earlier and to a greater extent than in other industries, because there's a greater tendency, a greater hedonic disparity between the customer and the service worker, and it's a way of forestalling envy.
That's a really fascinating psychological perspective, and it makes sense, especially in that service environment where you're being served in that direct way, where you could have this perceived power differential, and a way to maybe diffuse some of that potential tension of a power discrepancy would be to have that tip. Mm-hmm. So, Mike, I want to actually walk through a bit of the history of how tipping developed, particularly in the food industry. Here's a brief historical timeline that I want to share with the listeners, and I know you are already aware of this, but up until the 1850s, tipping was not a thing in America. There was the American plan, as it was called, where dining was considered a standard part of the lodging experience. The owner of the lodge would actually preside over the meal themselves, and everyone would dine together, and the guest was considered like any family friend who would come over for dinner, and obviously they wouldn't pay in that situation. Then in the 1900s to the 1920s, the European plan becomes more prominent, and the European plan is where the prices are separated a bit, where there's a lodging price and there's a dining price, as opposed to all of it being under one umbrella. It's at this point, when lodging and food are separated, that tipping becomes a little bit more common. Tipping really explodes in America in the 1920s and beyond, where this American plan is kind of supplanted by the European plan, as meals and accommodations become even further separated during the lodging experience. There used to be laws against tipping in many states, and that became reversed in the 1920s and beyond, and prohibition actually had a very significant effect on tipping, because the hospitality industry was forced to examine the profitability of each of its services. So when alcohol became prohibited, the food sector became much less profitable in general, and tips became a way for owners to pass some of the costs off to the customers. So that's a abbreviated yet a long-winded description of the history of tipping. So it wasn't always here. It was a custom that really was born out of the separation of food from lodging as that developed in the 1920s and beyond.
Right. And that restaurants really followed. Standalone restaurants existed before, you know, in the 1920s, but they tended to follow what the hotels did in their dining establishments.
So let's dive into some of your research. A lot of the work focuses on the perspective of tipping from the customer, the server, and then from the restaurateur. From the customer's perspective, does tipping increase customer satisfaction with the service?
Yes. I've done a couple of studies where I've followed restaurants who have eliminated tipping, and was able to follow their online ratings from before to after. So for example, Joe's Crab Shack, they, a few years ago, took 18 of their restaurants, and at different points in time over the year, those restaurants went to no tipping. Ultimately, all but four of them switched back to tipping because they encountered some resistance from customers and or servers. But what I was able to do was to, with the help of a company called Review Trackers, they gave me the online reviews of those restaurants, plus some control restaurants from Joe's Crab Shack or related kinds of restaurants in the, you know, same jurisdictions. So I could compare tipping before and after. What the data showed me was that when they eliminated tipping, their online ratings went down. And those restaurants that reinstated tipping, their online ratings went back up. We read all the time about how tipping is under assault and restaurants are abandoning tipping, and that there's this movement. That's bull, okay? There has been an interest in among some restaurateurs in eliminating tipping, and we can get into why they might want to do that later. But for right now, I was able to find a place, a Reddit website, that lists no tipping restaurants, and there are about 200 in this country. That's just a drop in the bucket. It's not a massive movement, okay? But there are a substantial number of restaurants in the United States that have eliminated tipping. And I was able to identify them by talking to them, by going through press records and so forth, identify when they eliminated tipping, when they didn't. And that's a nice broader range of restaurants than just Joe's Crab Shack. These all tend to be independent restaurants. But there were some very fancy, expensive, and some moderately priced, and all in between. again, scrape the reviews from before and after, do an analysis, and what do I find? If you eliminate tipping and replace it with service-inclusive menu prices, that lowers online ratings for everyone except very expensive restaurants. The most upscale restaurants are not hurt by replacing tipping with service-inclusive pricing. But anything less than that top tier, their online ratings go down. If you replace tipping, if you eliminate tipping, you replace it with service charges, everybody's online ratings go down, even if you're an upscale restaurant. People hate service charges, and their satisfaction when they're charged a service charge goes down regardless of the type of restaurant. So it depends in part on the expensiveness of the restaurant and what you replace tipping with. But in general, people seem to be more satisfied under tipping than the alternatives.
Now, that doesn't surprise me so much because it's being replaced with that automatic service charge. And as a customer myself, as we all are, sometimes we're annoyed by that expected 15% tip, but I think I'd be even more annoyed, or I personally, I get more annoyed when it's just implied, you will be giving us this tip, and that's sort of how it feels like. Are there any studies that look at restaurants that have decided to abandon tipping with no automatic service charge in place?
You can't eliminate tipping. Restaurants have 8% profit margin. I can't eliminate tipping and all of a sudden have to pay my servers substantially more and stay in business unless I collect that money from somewhere. And there are really two options. I can impose an automatic service charge, or I can have higher menu prices. And if I replace it with service charges, everybody's pissed at me. Nobody likes that. If I replace it with higher menu prices, that's fine if it's a really upscale restaurant. Those customers are wealthy and not that price sensitive. It's a more unique dining experience, and therefore, you know, they kind of have some monopoly power. But if it's a nice but casual or lower scale restaurant, higher menu prices, people are less happy. The online ratings go down, but there is no other option. I can't just eliminate tips requirement. Does that make sense?
It does. So it's embedded in the financial model of restaurants that there needs to be this extra tip or service charge or something, because without that, they can't afford to pay their servers adequately. Is that something that do you think the public appreciates or fully understands when they examine tipping? That it's not just a thank you, I appreciate your service, but it's you really do rely on these tips because the financial model of restaurants and the food industry is kind of based on this tipping model.
I don't have a direct survey asking this question, believe it or not, but I suspect that most people are aware that servers make less than the standard minimum wage, at least in many states. By federal law, servers only have to be paid something like $2 an hour, maybe $2.40. I don't remember the exact number, but it's roughly $2 an hour. The minimum wage is $7 to $8 an hour. States have their own laws. And in California, Washington, and a number of other states, servers are paid the standard minimum wage. But in most states in this country, servers get less than the minimum wage. And I think most customers are aware of that. And does that increase their sense of obligation for tipping? I think so, absolutely. What I suspect is that most customers believe that they're subsidizing the restaurant, right? They're paying part of the payroll, and that it benefits the restaurant immensely to have that reduction in their payroll cost. And they don't realize that competitive forces are such that almost all of those cost savings get passed on back to the customer in the form of lower menu prices. And so I don't think people fully appreciate kind of the role that tipping plays and who it benefits or doesn't benefit.
I'll expose my own ignorance. I didn't realize that extent. And I'm in Canada, so it's a bit different than the States, but that actually surprises me quite a bit that they're paid in many states so much lower than the minimum wage. I didn't realize that was a thing. it's not that they're just getting minimum wage and you want to say, listen, let's give you a little bit more than minimum wage because minimum wage isn't always great. We're saying just to even get you to minimum wage, you need those tips. That's embedded in the system. So unless I'm completely ignorant, which I might be, I imagine there are other people listening to this who didn't realize that.
Certainly. Look, it's amazing. We all tend to assume if I know it, everybody knows it. And that's simply not the case. For example, just a related illustration of this point. I would have thought everybody in this country, in the United States, knew that you were supposed to tip 15 to 20% in restaurants. That's what the social norm is. If you go online and look it up, if you go to etiquette books, there are newspaper articles, it just seems like everybody has to know that. But when I've done surveys of representative samples of the US, I find that really only about 70, 75% of the population knows that. 25 to 30% of the people in this country, adults in this country, don't know that the normative tip in restaurants is 15 to 20%. If they don't know that, there's certainly a lot of people who don't know that servers are making less than the standard minimum wage.
I will say I did know the 15 to 20%. So I've been tipping well. I've been tipping okay, but point taken. So from the customer's perspective, you outlined the research that has shown customers would prefer to have that optional tip, which most will choose to give, as opposed to that automatic gratuity service.
Right. Yes.
And then the other option would be just increasing food prices.
And what the data tell us is that restaurants that get rid of tipping and replace it with higher menu prices to cover the server's wages, their online ratings go down unless they're in a very expensive restaurant. But if it's a casual dining or you know, lower tier restaurant, those customers are more price sensitive. And when they see the menu prices go up, they're less happy, less satisfied. And it's not, of course, notice that there, all of these restaurants that have tried this have done it in an environment where their competitors retain tipping and retain these lower menu prices. What would happen if everyone were to eliminate tipping is not clear, but presumably people would adjust rather rapidly to the change in price. The problem is that that's price collusion. You can't get together with your competitors and set prices. It's illegal. The economics of this is that restaurants, for competitive reasons, need to have tipping so they can have lower menu prices and compete with their competitors who have tipping and lower menu prices.
Let's go back to the customer for a second and their relationship with the server. What does the research show in regards to this? How much profitability is there if you are a really good server? If you provide really great service, how much does that translate into a substantially higher tip that would be appreciated by the server?
It depends on how you define really great server. If you mean giving good service, being timely, getting the order correct, remembering who gets what, clearing tables at the appropriate time, those kinds of standard elements of service, the people who do that better do get better tips, but not substantially better tips. When I ask customers who are leaving the restaurant to rate their dining experience and then tell me how much they tipped, I find an average correlation of about 0.2. Correlations can range from 0 to 1, actually from -1 to +1. But 0 means there's no relationship. A relationship of 1, a R value of 1 is perfect, straight linear relationship. 0.2, what that means is about 4% of the differences in tips left by different dining parties, 4% can be explained by their ratings of service quality.
So not much.
Not much. It's a very, very weak relationship. On the other hand, simple, concrete server actions like smiling at the customer, calling the customer by name, touching the customer briefly on the arm or shoulder, squatting down next to the table when you're interacting with the customer, that brings your eyes down to their level, facilitates eye contact. All of these are things which increase social rapport. And they have a pretty substantial impact on tips. So there are things servers can do to earn more, substantially more. And you can argue that establishing rapport with a customer is an element of good service. So yes, good service, when we're talking about the social dimensions of service, pays off. But service generically, it is related to tips, but not strongly.
Is the correlation strong enough that servers notice it and then are actually motivated to provide better service to customers because they realize, yeah, I know that when I put a better day of service in, I'm going to get higher tips? Or is the difference so minor that it doesn't end up being a motivating factor?
Both yes and no. Okay. It's too small for servers to notice. If I were to plot the data out so you could see the relationship between the size of tip and the customer service ratings, it would take a correlation of about 0.3 for you to just eyeballing it say, oh yeah, there's a relationship there. 0.2 is less than that. And that's under ideal circumstances, right? That's when the data is all plotted out. Very few servers do that. So the relationship is certainly too weak for servers to notice that, oh yeah, those customers I give great service to give me better tips. But if you survey restaurant waiters and waitresses, as I've done, you'll find that most of them, 60%, 70%, believe that there is a moderate to strong relationship. They don't perceive a relationship that actually exists. It is too weak to notice, but they have this misperception that there is a strong relationship. Why do they have that misperception? That I don't know. It could be that they just buy into what everybody as consumer says, oh, why do you tip? If you ask consumers that, the most common answer is I tip to reward good service. So servers start with this just presumption that of course tips are related to service, and that their belief is resistant to evidence to the contrary doesn't surprise me. We all hang on to our beliefs. But what's more than that, servers have a motivation to want to believe that tips are related to service, because if they're related to service, then I deserve the tips that I make, and I've earned them. But if they're not related to service, then it's really a handout, and that's less socially acceptable. So I think that there are a lot of reasons, but servers do perceive a relationship. That means it can still motivate, but they're not perceiving a real relationship. It doesn't exist, or it's too weak to notice.
How do servers in general feel about tipping? Do they like that model, or would most of them prefer the automatic gratuity, or do they not really have a preference in that department?
Well, all right. When I've asked servers, would you prefer working for an 18% automatic gratuity or for tipping, you know, voluntary tips? And roughly 22% say they'd rather strongly prefer working for automatic gratuity, and roughly 22% say they would strongly prefer working for tips. Everybody else is in the middle. There's a slight tendency for servers to prefer working for tips, but it's roughly 50-50. And that makes sense, right? If I'm a really good server, and by good, I mean one who's able to establish rapport with my customers, I'm going to get substantially better than 18%. But if I'm a server like I was when I waited tables and I was getting 15%, yeah, an 18% automatic gratuity sounds good to me.
How do servers actually do then?
Yeah.
Let's say that a server is making $2, $2.50, really below minimum wage. Do servers end up doing substantially better than they would have if they'd been given minimum wage? Or do they do a lot better than the line cooks and the people in the back of the kitchen who don't have the opportunity to be rewarded a tip?
Yeah. I hope you don't mind, but I'm going to qualify.
Not at all.
What I say. I do have an opinion, but there are people with a different opinion and there's some data. For example, restaurant servers are more likely to be living in poverty than other people. And there are social commentators who believe that tipping is the responsible factor here, that tipping underpays servers and that we need to eliminate the sub-minimum wage for tipped workers just for them to enjoy a livable wage. And I'm sure that that's true for many servers. It's not been my experience, and it's not the data that I get when I have looked elsewhere. For example, I helped the New York Hospitality Alliance do a compensation survey in New York City. Roughly speaking, servers are making twice as much as cooks and twice as much as hostesses. If servers are making $27 an hour, hostesses and cooks are making $14 an hour.
Wow.
And it's hard to justify that price differential. It's natural to say, well, to be a waiter, you've got to be physically attractive. You've got to have good English and speak in a polite manner. You've got to have strong social skills. And you don't need any of those things to be a cook. Yes, you have to know how to cook. But those social skills are rarer and they command a price premium. Okay, and that's why waiters, but if that were true, hostesses should be making as much as waiters because they're public facing just as the waiters are, and they're making what the cooks are making. Okay, the fact is tipping overpays servers relative to other work that requires comparable levels of skill.
You could argue, no, that a cook, there's usually some level of training for that. Not that there's no training for being a server, for being a host, but there's cooks who go to school, maybe have more rigorous studies in order to get to that position, no?
Yes, absolutely. You can argue that if anything, I've waited tables, right? I know what the training is. It's usually a couple of days, and that's more than adequate to get you to learn. It's just not that hard to hand out a menu, to take an order, and then deliver the food, right? It may take a little bit longer to learn that menu and to be able to make recommendations, but very few servers even do that anyway. But yeah, the training to be a cook is no doubt more intensive than the training to be a server. And that should argue that they would get more, but they don't.
When somebody tips 15%, does a waiter or waitress look at that as an insult, like that you gave me the base minimum? And is that how tipping has kind of evolved from 15% to 18% to 20%? Or is that a separate, more economic-based issue?
A couple of things. It is true that we used to tip 15%, then 18%, and now the standard's really closer to 20. I believe, but it's just a theory, there are people who tip to show off and to get the server to like them so that they get even better service than other people on their future visits and so forth. There is a competitive nature to tipping for some people. And I tip in part to be treated better than other people and looked upon more favorably than other people. In order for that to happen, I've got to give an above average tip. But when I and enough other people start doing that, I get this preferential treatment, and other people then are looked upon less well, and they're motivated to maintain their position. So they have to tip a little bit more because I bring the average up. So they've got to tip at least average to keep from being looked down upon. And I do think that the fact that for some people it's a competitive thing and they always have to tip more, and others then they create an external, what economists call an externality, that the people who tip less than them are treated less well, for them to avoid that loss of status, loss of future service, etc., those people have to start tipping more. And now all of a sudden the guy who wants to show off is finding, oh, my 20% used to be a great tip, but nowadays it's just average. I've got to tip 25. And that creates this pressure. How long that's sustainable, how high it will end up going, I don't know.
That's wild that a lot of customers sometimes complain, oh my gosh, why is tipping getting higher from 15 to 18 to 20%? But what I'm hearing you say is that it's actually kind of customer driven.
Oh, absolutely. 100%.
The way it's gotten to 15, 18, 20% has been this psychological phenomenon you're describing.
I believe so, yeah.
I want to pivot to some of your economic work in this and some of your models from the profitability perspective. You've explained, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but you've explained in your work that from a pure profitability standpoint, that the tipping model, and this is from the perspective of the restaurateur, the tipping model is designed to reduce menu prices, as we discussed, in order to drive more customer demand, but this only works if there's sufficient profit from increased demand. Yet some of your research has suggested that what tipping really does is it leads to this overpayment of servers, as we described, more so than it actually leads to restaurant profits. So based on your economic models and your research in that area, what do you think from the restaurateur's perspective is the best system moving forward?
If you don't mind, I'm going to start by kind of rephrasing some
of
the things.
Please rephrase. Rephrase and correct.
Okay. Restaurant customers, for the most part, there are clearly individual differences, but for the most part, restaurant customers are price sensitive. And if you increase your menu prices, you're going to lower demand. As we've already talked, if I eliminate tipping, I've got to either replace it with service charges, which people hate, or I have to raise my menu prices to cover the increased cost of paying my servers. You would think logically, rationally, that a customer is going to look at a restaurant with 15% higher menu prices and no tipping as essentially the same cost as a restaurant with lower menu prices, but you're expected to tip. In fact, that's not the case. I've done the research. Customers tend to look at menu prices and compare across restaurants, and it's menu prices that drive perceptions of restaurant expensiveness. And they basically ignore the fact that in some cases you tip and in others you don't. I don't know if historically restaurants started tipping in order to lower their menu prices. It could have been, I'm going to let my customers tip my servers because it gives me a competitive advantage in attracting servers at that time. But at any rate, the end result is over time, my lower cost allow me to lower my menu prices, which I do. I'll enjoy a competitive advantage until my competitors lower, and I force my competitors to do the same, right? And ultimately, market forces mean that all of those cost savings get passed on back to the customer. It's not a real strong advantage to the restaurant to have tipping in that way.
So what would be the ideal method from the restaurateur's perspective?
In terms of, there is a very real problem in the restaurant industry that our profit labor costs are going up, and to pay for those labor costs, we're having to increase menu prices. As menu prices go up, servers' tips are going up, and servers' tips go up even more than the labor, the cook's wages that drove the menu price, right? Over time, there's the discrepancy between front and back of house has gotten larger and larger. And it's just not tenable for that to continue. Something's going to have to give. To go straight to answering your question, I think the most tenable model is to have tipping, but to allow restaurants to require servers to share their tips with other hourly employees, so cooks and hostesses and so forth. And we're slowly moving there. By federal law, if you pay a sub-minimum wage to your tipped employees, you can't take those tips and force them to tip out, except other tipped employees. So, for example, it is legal under federal law, if you claim the tip credit, I can make my servers tip out the bartender because he's a tipped employee also. And they have to share their tips with the bartender who's giving them drinks, which they're serving. But I can't make them tip the cook or the hostess. Under federal law, and the interpretation of that law by Trump, and I hate Trump, there's almost nothing I agree with that he's done, but he is, I think, correct in the way he interpreted the labor regulations in this instance, that if you don't claim a tip credit, if you pay your tipped employees the regular minimum wage, then you can make them share their tips pretty broadly, including with cooks, janitors, other hourly employees. And that's probably the solution, because it's hard to eliminate tipping. I have to raise menu prices. I can't do that. Or I have to impose a service charge, which people hate. Okay. Let's just leave tipping in place. Allowing tip pooling and tip sharing is a way of keeping this institution of tipping, but avoiding the overpayment to servers. Now that money gets, some of it gets redistributed to the cooks, to the hostess, to the busboy, to the dishwasher. So they're not making so much and my back of house is making more. And that helps lower the pressure on me to keep raising my labor costs. So I think that's the solution.
The idea of shared tipping is very logical, but it's a complicated issue. Like you said, there's so many perspectives here. There's the restaurateur's perspective, the server's perspective, the other employees at the restaurant's perspective, and there's the consumer perspective.
Right. Well, and the government perspective.
This episode of Preconceived is sponsored by Epilogue Wills. Let me guess, you know you need a will, but you just haven't had time to get it done. With Epilogue Wills, you don't have to work around a lawyer's schedule. You can create it at home in as little as 20 minutes. Epilogue Wills are simple, smart, and legally binding. The online process is straightforward, affordable, and light on legal jargon. I created my own will using Epilogue, and it was super easy. The platform is incredibly intuitive and user-friendly, and it literally took me 20 minutes to do. And for someone with a morbid sense of humor like me, I actually found it kind of fun. I left some very particular instructions for how my funeral and shiva were to be conducted, specifically which pizza places and delicatessens to cater the event, who I want to give speeches, the important stuff like that. But if you aren't morbid like me and don't feel like planning out your funeral as if it's a wedding, don't worry, I'm probably the only person who was making such specifications. But more importantly, I'm just happy that I took the 20 minutes to officially make my wishes known and do the important thing of putting a will together, which we all know we will need one day, yet all too often pushed to the future. So I highly recommend you to go to epiloguewills.com and use the promo code PRECONCEIVED to save $20. That's epiloguewills.com and use the promo code PRECONCEIVED.
If you ask who are the winners and losers with the tipping system, I think servers are the real winners because they're in many cases, perhaps not all, but in many, many cases, taking home substantially more money than any other kind of work for which they are qualified. Government is the clear loser because it helps support lower menu prices, sales taxes are lower. In addition, tip income is easy to hide, and so income taxes are lower. The government gets less revenue because of tipping. It's the clear loser from that system. Customers and businesses have pluses and minuses, and it really is complicated to say whether they're better off or not, and probably it's not the same for all customers and all businesses. Right? There are customers who are worse off under tipping. There are many who are better off in the same in terms of businesses.
That's very well said. I had one other question that's particularly relevant during this COVID period. For delivery, is the 15% still considered the appropriate etiquette? Because sometimes when you're ordering something and you get a much bigger delivery, but maybe it results in like one bag extra that the delivery person is carrying to your place, you wonder, wow, I've got a really big 15% tip here, but I mean, they kind of did the same job. Have you done any research or do you know what the generally agreed upon number is for delivery? Does it differ at all compared to an in-dining experience?
So first off, certainly when it comes to pizza delivery, most people are tipping a dollar and cent amount, not a percentage.
Okay.
They'll leave a couple of bucks per pie as opposed to a set percentage of the bill. There are people who tip a set percentage of the bill, but the majority of people think about tipping a pizza delivery to in dollar and cent amounts, not percentages. As for what the etiquette and the norms are, to be honest, I don't know. I'm not an etiquette expert. And even though I do research on this, I would guess it's the same. A 15 to 20% is the norm, but I don't know that for a fact. I can tell you, by the way, is I got some data from both a pizza delivery driver in Texas, but an even broader data set, a huge data set from the payment system company Square, where they gave me daily tip percentages across all their businesses by type. So I have quick service and full service restaurants, daily tip percentages going back 2 years. So I can follow and look at how COVID has impacted tipping. And I can then look at March to August of 2020 and compare that to March to August of 2019 and see what impact COVID has had. What's true is that for quick service and full service restaurants, for transactions where the credit card is not present, meaning it's mostly delivery, I'm ordering either on the internet or by phone, tips went up substantially. For quick service restaurants, credit card present payments, that is where people actually show up and hand the card over when they make their payment, that would be dine-in and also carry-out. For quick service restaurants, tips went up for them too. Tips went down for full service restaurants in credit card present. But I think that's because for full service restaurants, the nature of the service changed. But everybody else, tips increased. So COVID has made people more generous, except in the one case where service was substantially reduced as a result.
Good news to hear that people have become more generous during COVID. Mike, thank you so much. You've illuminated a lot of things for me about tipping on this podcast, and it fits really well with the concept of Preconceived, because tipping is, like I said at the beginning of the podcast, one of those things that we kind of just do, and there's good reason why we do it, as you've explained, but we don't always think about why we do it. And you've given some historical context, and for me, I didn't realize the extent to which tipping was really baked into the financial model in which servers were paid. And you've really shown that there's a lot of perspectives to consider here. There is the customer, there is the restaurant, there is the restaurateur, there are the servers, there are the cooks in the back, and like you said, the government also has its perspectives too. Is there any place that people can learn more about you or your research into tipping?
I have a website, tippingresearch.com, and manuscript that is typed versions. Once a paper is published, the publisher has the copyright, and I'm not allowed to post them. They try to sell their journals that way. But I can publish the typed versions of the same papers. Almost all of my tipping papers are available for people to read for free at that website.
Thanks a lot, Mike.
Thank you.
And thank you, everybody, for listening to another episode of Preconceived. Have a great day.